You're listening to the Berkman Audio Fishbowl from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Each week, we feature conversations with leading cyber scholars, entrepreneurs, activists, and policymakers as they explore the bleeding edge of the internet and technology, democracy, law, and society. For more information on the Berkman Center and for more programs like this, visit cyber.law.harvard.edu.
So I'm delighted to be able to introduce Dr. Dalida Benfield. So Dalida is, she's an artist, a scholar, and an advocate for social justice. So she is truly one of these interdisciplinary, hyphenated folks, and she does it just marvelously. She founded some years ago, I think 13 years ago, a video collective based in Berkeley,
Based in Chicago.
Oh, that's started in Chicago, that
Video Machete.
Video Machete. She's taught at the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana. She's taught at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. And she's done lots of work around art and media support for education in public schools. And she also has a long publication history. She has coming out and co-editorship, The Stolen Memory, Latina Art in the Global Present, as well as the revision of her dissertation, Apparatuses, Globalities, Assemblages, The Third Cinemas. She also has a long exhibition history working in digital media and video production. I would also like to add on a personal note that Dalida has been an incredible fellow. Between her work with the loosely affiliated Berkman Arts Group that she's helped to move forward, her work organizing cyber scholars, and also exhibitions such as Histories of Now, which is at the Museum School, and she also organized with Matthew and some other people the MFA Symposium based on some of that work. It's been incredible to have her as a fellow and kind of bask in the presence of her work. So Dalida will speak, and after she's done, she'll invite questions, or around 1:30, we will invite questions. Okay, thanks.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Beth, for that introduction. And I also really want to thank the Berkman Center for being a fabulous resting place over the past year, an extremely hospitable environment in which my thinking has really grown and I've learned so much. I also want to thank all of you for being here on such a gorgeous day, and I'm really glad the air conditioning is on for us so we can just bask in the coolness of the room. This talk today is a representative of a kind of opening of a new research trajectory for me. And so I'm really looking forward to your suggestions, and I also hope that I will be offering some threads that you all might take up in your own future thinking and in our ongoing conversations. The piece that I'm presenting today is a smaller part of a larger project in which I'm looking at the contemporary online presence of ICT4D programs, and in particular, the role of women and of gender issues and racial representations in that online presence. What is the role of women's agency in the representation of development projects centered on women's empowerment? That's the overarching question I'm interested in. But today I'm just focusing on video. And I'm going to begin, in fact, with a video. And it comes to us from a project called Video Sewa. Video Sewa is a self-employed women's association video project based in Ahmedabad and has been producing grassroots video since 1985. It has been and remains a very important cornerstone and kind of guidepost for those of us who've been working in grassroots women's video production. And I was really pleased to find this video on YouTube. And now I'm going to play this. Oops.
The work of the Self-Employed Women's Association, SEWA, in Ahmedabad,
is to organize poor self-employed women, enable them to protect their interest, and help them get their rightful place in the economy. One of the key inputs in the work of Seva is communications. Seva uses modern video technology under the auspices of Video Seva to enable poor self-employed women workers to communicate their reality effectively to the rest of the world. Video Seva has been functioning to bring video technology in the hands of ordinary people and to use it as a tool for developmental communication.
My name is Leela Ben Datania. We were in the first time in the village of Bhoi પણ એવું કે વિડીયો શીખ્યા પણ અમારા ઘર ઝુંપડપટ્ટીમાં લાઈટ નહીં તો પણ અમે હિંમત કરીને વિડીયો શીખ્યા તો તારે વિડીયો પ્રોડ્યુસર બન્યા.
મને તો એકદમ બીક લાગી હતી, ચાલુ કરીશું તો કઈ ભડકો થશે, એટલે પેલા તો જનરેટર બહુ જ દીધી હતી એટલે દૂર ભાગતી હતી.
ઇસકે લીએ મુજે તો બહુ ઉમંગ થી કે ભાઈ મેં અપની બહેનો કો જો કાયદે બનાને વાલે હૈ ઉનકે સામને દ્રશ્ય બના કે બતાઉં. ઇસકે લીએ મને તો વિડીયો શીખા.
અમારા છોકરા કુદી ને એમ કે મારી મમ્મી તો દૂરદર્શન ની ક્વોલિટી વાળી ટેપો બનાવે, મારા પપ્પા તો ઘર ની બનાવે કે છે.
કેમેરો મેન કરતા હતા પણ સેજ કેમેરો હલતો હતો, હિલચિલ થતી હતી કેમેરા ને, પછી ધીમે ધીમે સ્થિર થવા લાગ્યો. દશરથ ભાઈ એમ કે છે તારે વિડીયો કરો હોય તો.
માય ફાધર ઇન લો વોન્ટ્સ મી ટુ ડુ ધી હાઉસ વર્ક એન્ડ પ્લક ફ્લાવર્સ ઇન ધ ફિલ્ડ્સ, બટ આઈ ઇન્સિસ્ટેડ ઓન લર્નિંગ વિડીયો. First, I learned to identify English words in video, then learned sound, and then camera.
As we started making better and better tapes, I started using the medium in direct cast mode directly amongst the members who are self-employed women to help organize them, to organize new trades, to organize in new areas, to increase membership of existing trade groups, and to motivate, mobilize, and strengthen existing membership. And also we started using the medium a lot to train and orient poor self-employed women. And we were, you know, videos started to become an integral part of all Seva activities, and it was helping in all the ongoing work of Seva, and we were not using the medium in isolation.
I'm going to stop there. The video is, I think, a wonderful example of, as the speaker just shared with us, the integration of video into a very complex, kind of holistic approach to economic development, women's self-empowerment, community building, and also cultural production via the production of the videos. This kind of transformative power of video, the transformative experience of holding a camera, of creating a videotape, is precisely what led me to both becoming a video maker as well as wanting to work with communities in producing our own videos about issues that we were captured by, whether they be personal issues, creative explorations, leading us into new questions, or pursuing particular policy or political campaigns. This work led me in 2005 to the World Summit on Information Society, the WSIS. And at the WSIS, I was struck by the number of images of women engaged with technology all over the world. It was a kind of running visual trope. Women with cameras, women with computers, children with computers, women, as you can see, making radio. And so my sense was that there was a very exciting, emerging moment, perhaps a women's global communication revolution. The WSIS was extremely important for all of us who attended, and I was co-organizer of the North American Media Justice Delegation, because we had all been working in local contexts, and so this introduced us to the global field, which we quickly learned was identified under a series of acronyms, Women in Development, or WID, Gender in Development, or GAD, and then finally, Information Communication Technology for Development, ICT4D. The WISIS was an extremely contested site. The civil society declaration that was written at the close of the WISIS was entitled Much More Could Have Been Achieved, reflecting not only the fact that the civil society suggestions had not been fully incorporated into the final WISIS action plan, but also the sense in which there was a deep disconnect between the policymakers and the people on the ground. And even within civil society, there were many, many factions, power struggles, etc. And we felt, as a North American Media Justice delegation, again, that we were being introduced to a whole new series of acronyms and structures that we had been unfamiliar with up until then. While my own research since then took a turn towards working on understanding women's transnational video art production, I'm now really interested in turning back to questions that the WISIS opened for me around the online presence of ICT4D programs. This is a contested site not only because of policy and civil society issues, but also because of the overarching question of development discourse itself. And this is just an overview of some of the critiques of development. We have, since the 60s, the idea proposed by Andre Gunderfrank of the development of underdevelopment, so that there is a global hierarchy of relationships between core countries and peripheral countries that is by no means accidental. It is one that has been in part produced through modernity. The idea of coloniality, which emerges from Latin American thinkers Enrique Dussel, Aníbal Quijano, Arturo Escobar, and others, that there is an ongoing colonial legacy of thought that peripheralizes the epistemic realities of people of the global South. Catherine Walsh offers the idea of envelopment, that there is, in fact, an enveloping of the worlds, the cosmologies of indigenous people in the global South. And Achille Mbembe offers the idea that, in fact, Africa is determined only through a negative definition, that we know in the West very much about what Africa is not, but not what it is. ICT4D is also a contested realm, extending the ideas that critique development and the development policies, practices, information communication technologies are also seen as a site for the perpetuation of hierarchies of sense. Lisa Nakamura offers the idea that the internet is in fact a site for racial formations, and that race and gender together form a powerful trope for internet diffusion. So that ideas of penetration and open territories, the electronic frontier, that all of those in fact carry colonial legacies embedded within them. And then ICT4D as a development redux is offered by Ravi Sundaram, who, thinking from the perspective of South Asia, is critical of the remixing of development as an ICT project, when in fact the first wave of development, in his eyes, is also or was a failure. And ICT4D is just repeating those failures. This critique extends through gender, women, and ICT4D as well. There have been powerful critiques of women in development and gender in development from the perspective of women in the global South. the idea that development discourse reproduces women as exoticized others, and in particular with ICT4D, the assumption that it is good for women, when in fact there has not been a deep engagement with women who are the subjects of ICT4D programs. So with all of this in mind, I proceed with a cautious optimism with the following question. Can video amplify women's voices in and beyond ICT4D projects? What is possible there? Again, I begin with a sense of inspiration from projects like Video Sewa, in which there is so clearly both an expression of and an integration into women's lives and visions for their futures. But I'm also interested in this critical question. Is it possible to move from women's talk to women's voice? And this is a really wonderful distinction that's offered to us by the communication scholar Annette Srebruni. So that there's a lot of video of women talking that is produced through development programs. But what about women's voice? What about women's voices actually having an impact on policy, on political negotiations, in their everyday lives and struggles for power? So again, returning to Video Sewa as a possible model, could this happen on YouTube? I said that I found the Video Sewa video on YouTube. However, it is one of very few videos that are on YouTube from ICT4D projects. And in fact, YouTube as a field is one that is not one that's been particularly hospitable to women. At the same time, YouTube, as we all know from these statistics, is an extremely important carrier for video information. Extremely high volume, and these are YouTube statistics, so we can take those with a grain of salt. But it's impossible to not think about YouTube as a possible carrier for women's videos and women's empowerment in this sense. The idea of YouTube providing as well a network of creative practice so that those who produce on YouTube and communicate with each other are in a particular relationship that constructs a relation of an art world, a creative site in which they can make sense with each other in a way that is not possible offline. This seems to be another generative stream in which women's videos might exist. And yet, gender and YouTube, it might just be a big bummer. And anyone who just does a search on women on YouTube will instantly see what I mean. And you can all just do it now and see what comes up. According to a 2008 study, women are 33% of vloggers or video bloggers. And interestingly, 60% of women's vlogs are about personal matters, and more men than women vlogged about public topics. At the same time, vlogs that feature women as the only character average many more views than those for men. So again, this interesting kind of contested arena, this great possibility of YouTube, and yet there are fewer women using YouTube, and in any case, so keyword searches. What I've done up to this point in my research is do a series of keyword searches looking for ICT 4D videos produced by, with, or about women. These are the search terms that I used, and I came up with 482 videos. Of these, there are 27% conferences, 23% documentation of special events or projects, and you can read the rest of the percentages, but interviews with practitioners, interviews with administrators, promotional videos, that is, videos that are just promoting the programs, a small number of interviews with participants in development projects, and then an even smaller percent of participant created videos, and then a percentage that is just other videos that were produced alongside or that were that the program was interested in and just uploaded to their site or to their onto their channel. So, kind of echoing the title of the recent book, Democracy is an Endless Meeting. As you can see, the conferences are a huge piece of what gets recorded. And any of you who've ever done video work or gotten to be known for doing video work knows that we're asked all the time to videotape conferences. And although I'm sure that this is a fascinating webcast for whoever's watching it, I think we also know that conference video can be a real drag. It is not the most engaging form of video production. At the same time, it's important for historical record, and it's important for often the women who are producing or who are giving talks in conferences to have that sense that it is accessible to other people. It is nevertheless, I think, a sign of the lack of creativity and the lack of centering video, again, in the same way that Video Sewa centered that work in their development projects, that this is the bulk of what is online. So in order to further understand the possible presence of women's voices, however, I've gone further into the videos to do a textual analysis, to really listen for women's voices. And I have done this across all of these different categories of videos. So not deciding, for example, to only focus on the participant-created videos or interviews with participants or any of the different categories, but really to try and get a sense across all of these forms what's possible. And to give you a sense of what might be a video that does not include women's voice and that frames women rather than allowing women to frame themselves, I wanted to show you this. This was uploaded by UNIFEM on October 1st, 2009. It's had 4,000 views. It's a PSA about violence against women produced by Leo Burnett.
Again.
from talk to voice, becoming the subject rather than the object of analysis, and recovering women's voices and development of knowledge from the standpoint of women. Although in that UNIFEM PSA, there's certainly an important and urgent message. It is not one that does this. Throughout my viewing of these videos, I have found that even videos that seem to be side effects of a process, there can be a very powerful articulation of women's voice. And this video is very short. It's an Egyptian filmmaker, Hanan Abdallah, speaking on gender equality from the UNESCO Youth Forum. It was uploaded by UNESCO on October 25th, 2011, and it has 575 views.
My name is Hanan Abdallah. I am a documentary filmmaker based in Egypt, and I'm an Egyptian, and I'm also sort of British, so I have a dual nationality. But this film that is going to be shown here at UNESCO is a film about four women in Egypt, and it's about their daily resistance. They talk about very personal stories about marriage, about divorce, about wedding nights, about children, about, you know, about harassment, and it's about sort of an ongoing kind of fight for independence in a country that before still isn't independent necessarily. It's in the context of the revolution. It's about how you can't isolate any certain issues, say women's issues or so on, from the economic problem that these issues stem from, and that if you try and fight for change within the whole society itself, you're more likely to be able to have change for those things themselves. So it's not only about women, it's about the system at large, or at least that's what I hope people will think of the film, or get as a message from the film.
So in that clip, what's striking is how much we learn from her in such a short amount of time. And although she's, of course, synopsizing her own film, the power of her direct address is also very powerful. In this next clip, which is in Spanish, and so I'm just going to show a little bit in case not everyone is fluent in Spanish. We're going to see a project in Ecuador run by the Asociación Mujeres Juntas Parroquiales Rurales del Ecuador and supported by IICD that looks to develop the capacity of local women who act as representatives of marginalized rural communities in Ecuador. And the project aims to place local governance by women leaders of juntas in Ecuador on the map through effective participatory and democratic local governance, through knowledge management and the use of ICTs. And I'll talk about it after I show it. More. Oops, sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, let's do that. Thank you. Thank you so much.
AMJUPRE es la Asociación de Mujeres de Juntas Parroquiales Rurales del Ecuador. Nosotras, dentro de toda nuestra visión y nuestra misión está fortalecer las capacidades individuales y grupales de las mujeres que conforman la Asociación de Mujeres, como también de las mujeres rurales. Lo que más hemos hecho es trabajar sobre el tema de liderazgo, participación política, gestión pública, desarrollo local. Obviamente iniciando con el tema de autoestima, y también estamos, eso sí, con mucha fuerza trabajando ya con la Escuela de Liderazgo de las Mujeres Rurales, con el enfocado desde las TIC.
Vivo en una parroquia de la zona rural donde no contamos con ningún servicio básico. gracias a tantas cosas, porque en mi parroquia fui médico, fui profesora, fui secretaria de una tenencia política, también fui conchera, recogí ripio, hice tantas cosas para poder obtener dinero.
Como lideresa de mi parroquia, ¿no se ha estado acostumbrado a que sobre tus espaldas lleguen todas las responsabilidades? Actúas de una manera, ¿cómo te digo?, a la ligera. Ahora, gracias a Anjupre, y yo creo que es lo más grande que tengo, aprendí a conocerme, aprendí a conocer los valores de la gente, y por ende también a escuchar y a valorar un poco todas sus necesidades.
Yo ciertamente...
So I think what's striking in that video is that we see, of course, women in positions of leadership. We also see them in multiple roles in the community. We see many different aspects of the community. And so there's a sense of a complete whole in which the ICTs are engaged in a conversation. They're present, but they're not framing the entire context. Rather, the women are framing the ICTs. And this video is uploaded by an individual called The Real, The Four Real 87 on July 20th, 2011. And it is described as a group of dynamic Southern African women from Malawi, South Africa, Zambia, and Zimbabwe who are committed to using ICTs as a modern way of amplifying women's voices, visibility, and creating solidarity. Oops.
Hi, my name is Chaiwe Mshaoko. We're here in South Africa. We're here for an ICT workshop, and well, I'm from Zambia originally, but I'm here working with Youth Vision Zambia, hosted by Women's Network and JAS, to work around ICT. It's an important tool in today's world. You know, young people actually are in the information age, where computers and ICT is the leading information source.
Hi, my name is Phyllis. I'm from Malawi. I work with MANIRELA, Malawi Network of Religious Leaders, living with or affected by HIV and AIDS. I am here with the JAS group. We're working on the importance of ICT. I think it's very, very important for our organization because every day technology is changing and there are hard places to reach. And we have religious leaders in such areas, and we think using such tools like cell phones, we can disseminate so much information to them.
Hi, my name is Nina Matanya. I'm coming from Malawi. At the moment, I'm in South Africa because I work with the JAS, and we've been partnered again with the Women Net. This I see. Program, it's very important to my organization because I work with women. In my country, I use it as with cell phone when I want to communicate with people. But with this knowledge which I'm gaining here, I can disseminate it with my friends, in my other organizations. Thank you.
So yeah, you heard it. ICT is important to reach out to a lot of people, let it be the youth, the women. We need ICT. We're getting empowered. And yeah, we hope by you seeing that women, youths are using ICT, you too will get inspired. Yeah.
ICT in this one is so nicely placed in the domestic arena at the same time that it's clear that it's part of a program that each of these women is engaged in on the social level. And it's also that very last moment creates the sense of deep personal connection between us and the person who's videotaping. But at the same time, as I have been looking through all of the videos, I have found that the idea of participant-constructed video, of participatory video that is often understood to be the most authentic form of production in grassroots context does not always result in moments like that of connection. Rather, depending on the conceptual framework of the program in which a video is produced, participant-constructed videos can often simply parrot the programmatic ideals of the programs in which they're made. And so a video like this one that is, again, kind of a side effect of a larger project, they're part of an ICT gathering and now they're coming together to discuss it, this video actually has much more power than many videos that are intentionally produced as participant-constructed or participatory videos. The next one is a conference video. This is called The Message from Asian Women in Cooperative Development Forum. In 2004-2007, AWCF and INWENT, Capacity Building International Germany, implemented in three of AWCF's member organizations the project IT at Co-ops, Information Technology for Southeast Asian Cooperatives. So we'll watch just a little bit of this, and you'll see some documentation of the conference, but then also some other interesting additions. Oops, sorry. Here we go.
Four years ago, the Asian Women in Cooperative Development Forum, or AWCF, with the support of INVENT, Capacity Building International, and German Federal Ministry for Economic Cooperation, sowed the seed of a dream, that of a strong and viable cooperative movement built by empowered people through information technology. The IT at Co-ops Train the Trainers Project. The 100-day training sparked the hope and passion of the chosen cooperative staff to put value added to their current jobs through IT. The project was a start of an insatiable learning journey, forever seeking and continuously improving. Today, we see another facet of that journey. More than a reunion, this activity is also a revisit. To return to our beginning, see the landmarks we built along the way and reflect how we have grown as persons and organizations through the IT at Co-ops project. The IT at Co-ops Philippines. Information technology is not only limited to the use and expert manipulation of computers. It encompasses a fusion of computers and information that helps to produce, manipulate, and communicate information. Information that will empower our cooperatives and ultimately the people we are working for. The IT at Co-ops training equipped the trainers with the practical knowledge and skills necessary for the effective use of technology relevant to the realities of the cooperatives. To put the message across more effectively, our training skills were...
One of the important tensions in the field of ICT4D is the corporate sponsorship of ICT trainings like this one. Cisco Systems recently, over the past 10 years, launched a program called Achieving Equality in the IT Sector. And that initiative was designed to integrate women into the IT workforce. And interestingly, in one of their initial descriptions of the project, it created a dichotomy between women working in science and technology and women working in the arts and humanities. And that represents to me a wonderful pointer towards the sense that women are understood as consumers, not producers, as workers, not creators or designers, and not certainly as content or knowledge creators. However, in this clip from the Philippines, from the IT co-op training, I think we see this wonderful conjuncture in which women are, in fact, working in this intersection to become creative producers of both contexts in which IT are used personally, socially, in the workforce, and also they're producing a new sense of knowledge and creative expression through the production of the documentation. This next video is the Arab Techies meeting, and this might be a favorite here because it features a Berkman affiliate, although she's only on for a moment, but you'll see her. And let me, I don't think I said when this was, well, I'll say when it was uploaded after. I think is so lovely is how we hear women's voices without hearing anybody speak. So we have the music providing the soundtrack, and at the same time, this very large sense of the women's conversation. I'm going to try and go a little more quickly here. We still have one more video to watch, and I want to be sure that we have time for conversation. This final video, I think, provides a kind of powerful counter to the Leo Burnett UN advertisement or PSA. This is titled My Anger by Duduzil Dlamini. It was uploaded on April 9th, 2010, and has 153 views. As she describes it, this story is about rape and the anger of African women and Duduzil herself. The story was produced in a workshop facilitated by Women's Net in association with the Sex Workers Education and Advocacy Task Force. Oops.
There we go. The rapist. What kind of human being you are? Do you have feelings? Do you have hearts? Do you have blood? Are you breathing? You're not a human being. Are you an animal? If you are, what type of animal? Where do you live? Where can I find you? Are you a food? Who cook you? I hate you. You nasty. You greedy. You selfish. You think about yourself. What about me and others? You steal our pride. You steal our dignity. You take all confidence. Where is your eyes to see me? Where's your ears to hear the different voices are crying? with a full of tears and shaking, scrambling, say, stop, stop. What about a baby with a small voice? They cannot even shout at you. Just say, what are you doing to me? Where is your guilty? When you saw a woman stealing with fear because of your nasty. If I am a justice, I will open a big hole in desert where is no water, no food and tree to see you struggling as we are. The sun burns slowly. But I challenge justice to do the work, to work together and fight to win. Get all these animals to jail, whereby take the key and throw in a deep sea. They not belong in this world to stay with the human beings. Justice, justice, forward with justice. Do your work. They not exist in this world. Bye, Luto, forever.
A paraphrasing of the McBride Report, Many Voices, One World, which helped shape initial UN policy on communication. Some might say it hasn't helped shape it enough. I think what these videos speak to is the persistence of women's agency and creativity in diverse and highly constrained context of production. And they also point to, I think, decolonial aesthetics, countering the sense of the imposition of narratives, instead a refiguring and a reframing of women's experience. But at the same time, and again, I'm at the very initial phase of this work, I think it points to the lack of impact of internet distribution for women's grassroots video production. There is a need, I think, still to look very much offline for women's innovation and communication. And I also think that the suggestion, which has been made recently by Richard Heeks, ICT4D scholar, that ICT4D needs to become ICT4D 2.0 is obvious here, that there is so little taking into account of the possibilities of YouTube and other forms of social media and sharing. And I will end there, and I really invite all of your questions and look forward to being in conversation.
Yes. That rang so many bells with me. That was absolutely marvelous. Thank you very much. 6 years ago, I did a book called Cinderella or Cyberella, Empowering Women in the Knowledge Society. And the theme was really very much the same thing of yours, looking at women as content creators, looking at women's agency with regard to information technology, women as actors and not objects. So I was very, very interested in everything that you presented. And I'm wondering if you thought, you know, in terms of thinking Richard Heeks' point about moving into social media, particularly with regard to underserved women, the the possibilities of using mobile phones for video dissemination, because obviously mobile phones for poor women in developing countries are the most accessible of the new technologies.
I think it's an extremely important arena to be excited about. A lot of what I came across, in fact, and there wasn't enough time to really address this in this talk, but there is an enormous amount of interest in the ICT4D field in mobile technology. So there's a lot of work happening in that arena. I think that I approach that, however, with the same kind of cautious optimism about how and under what conditions in ICT4D programs women will be engaged in the production of content or in their participation in the programs, in the design of programs, and in framing rather than being framed by the desires and kind of imaginary of what mobile technology can do.
Just to underline that point, I've had some contact with the GSMA Association in London, which has got a huge grant from USAID and DFID and the Sherry Blair Foundation and AusAid, Australian Aid, I think up to $15 million, to get mobile phones to bottom-of-the-pyramid women. But by defining it as bottom-of-the-pyramid women, they are looking at women as not even as consumers, well, as consumers, but mostly they're thinking of them as a new revenue stream for the mobile operators.
Mm-hmm.
And the participation of women is almost totally overlooked. Mm-hmm. But your point is very important.
Hi. I was wondering, did you code the videos at all for, you know, a region or country, like for the source of the video or the subjects that are portrayed in the video? I'm just curious if you saw, if you did any breakdown and you saw any trends across that, like who was producing more or less.
Well, one of the obvious ways that the videos, I think, are kind of pre-coded is that is because of YouTube's global penetration, right? So that although YouTube does have local interfaces in many, many countries, and those are available via the YouTube website, also the Wikipedia entry on YouTube has the list. I think obviously there's a limitation in terms of who has access to YouTube and who will be able to upload videos. In terms, the videos are not coded for geographical location. That's something I would look forward to doing. However, I can say broadly that there are clearly trends around mobile phone technology, which is more centered in Africa. And then also the work in Latin America, I think, is much more integrated with long-standing community development projects, such as the ones that we saw. And I think that comes from many different histories of community organizing and the kind of development work that Catherine Walsh talks about. She has the critique of development as envelopment, and then offers as a counter the idea of buen vivir, or the reframing of life according to indigenous beliefs and cosmologies. And I think that kind of thinking, a thinking that is very much taking control of local development projects, that there are many more successful stories like that in Latin America. The Middle East and the South Asian projects, I think, tend to have more of the emphasis on economic empowerment and on integration in the workforce. And that, in large part, is due to the longstanding collaborative program that Cisco initiated.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious about the role of women networks in the monitoring of development projects. I was thinking that, you know, one of the big problems in a place like Colombia is that, yes, you say we're going to bring water into this town or into this region, and things don't happen, and people don't use their money as it should be. So I wonder to what extent there are groups that have a very special focus on a kind of, you know, state accountability for projects that are of interest to women. You know, like building of hospitals or building of centers for nutrition or something like that. Because a lot of the public money gets squandered. And, you know, it's this sort of borderline between, you know, are you informing or are you being an activist? But there could be some kind of a middle ground which says, all right, here are the development projects. They should be transparent. We expect 5 bulldozers in January. Are the bulldozers there? And then they go and take pictures and say, we don't see the bulldozers. And some way to create a movement out of grassroots development so it becomes less a question of, you know, is it the development of underdevelopment or whatever, and a play of words, but really a using of the medium for a kind of accountability that wasn't possible before. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I was wondering, you know, it would be an interesting experiment to run, to propose. I don't know who's interested in that. I mean, you probably know, but I would think that the Inter-American Development Bank or things, you know, places like that might be interested in saying, you know, we want to bring water to these places. We want to bring roads to these places. But there are a lot of people, men and women, who steal the money. There's a lot of embezzlement. And what do you think about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I want to clarify is that in the work that I'm doing, I'm focusing on ICT 4D projects. And the world of development is vast. And there are many, many players. Many of the development projects you can find out about via the UN and various various aspects of the UN that work on development. So I'm just trying to say that it is such a vast world. And so to think about the question of accountability, I think, in particular with ICT4D, sounds extremely promising. At the same time, what's apparent to me through looking at the videos is that, again, these are situations that are extremely constrained, so that by the time a program gets funded and is operating a telecenter on the ground, there are many, many different channels that that program has been vetted through. And so what's happening is heavily laden and to some extent, I think, indebted to the kinds of power through that the channels that it's had to travel through have you know, yeah, necessitated.
I'm just
right.
thinking like the narco, from Mexico.
Andres
was talking about mm-hmm. how people were saying, you know, I tweet and say, yes, a bomb exploded here. Yes, this happened. Now, there is a possibility of kind of movements that have to do with the interest of people. So I'm just thinking because you're saying, you know, how to focus the video or how to focus the mobile technology. And I'm just thinking, you know, it might be worthwhile, you know, where one would start that. Certainly, you know, in places where, you know, resources are scarce and people are, there's a sort of basic community organization. Anyway, it was just an idea I had, which just became, because this whole experience here with the Occupy Boston and Occupy this and Occupy that has this sense that there's this potential of a sort of Occupy this, you know, development project, Occupy this building of this road or building of this hospital, and that might be something where women feel comfortable and, you know,
as Andres mentioned, you know, you have to have certain securities because, of course, the crooks can also get to them and say, if you say something, you know, something can happen to you. But that's the other side of the information, of giving information, that it is not neutral politically. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's, it was just a thought.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for your work. I think it's fascinating, and I'm very excited to learn more about what you're doing.
You.
I'm a radical optimist. I'm not a cautious optimist. The question is, what do you need now? Like, you see those videos, and you see that it's very promising. In the same time, you make a sort of distinction between the personal and the public, but the personal is political.
Mm-hmm.
So let's make it raise. Mm-hmm. So what do you think would be needed from those projects where the personal is actually expressed to technology? And is your work sort of targeted on some normative, you know, values or normative ideas to go further? Like, how do you make it more professional? I mean, maybe less noise on the back when the Egyptian girl is speaking. I'm sure so many people know how to do that, and why can't she have access to it? I mean, a little bit more professionalism might not be so far away, and it might make the message more clear.
No, I think that's extremely interesting, and I am thinking about this work on, you know, on different kind of scales or registers of impact. So on the one hand, I'm interested in the conceptual framework through which programs are designed and implemented, but I'm also really interested in what it means for makers, what it means as a video maker, as a person who works in community media, what kinds of recommendations would I like to make to other people like me from viewing all of these videos? And what kind of, I'm not so fond of the phrase best practices, but I am really fond of the idea of a decolonial aesthetics. And, you know, something like the knowledge, the idea of the knowledge being gathered from women's experiences.
Yeah.
So I do think this is the other important project here, which is actually engaging with the videos as important pieces of knowledge.
Right.
So they're not just side effects, they're not just promotions for particular programs, but it really does communicate women's knowledges. And so from there, what can we build? That's my question. What can we build?
What is also interesting is that you said that the women are consumers and not producers. I look at my body, I'm sorry, I'm not a consumer, I'm a producer, I'm going to create. Women are creators. That's what we are born as. So looking at us as consumers is such a paradox.
Yes, yes, and I think I was pointing
all
to
over the phone. We are consumed,
right. Yes, and we are consumers and we are producers.
Yeah.
And so what I was pointing to is the way in which there are particular kinds of binaries like that are imposed by development projects, and I think in particular development projects that are designed to integrate women into the workforce, and so they do not consider women as content creators, but rather as providers of services, as simply, you know, a set of kind of tools.
And do you look at who designs the policies for development? Do you look at who is talking about that? Maybe some people just don't know anything about the rape, the domestic violence, and because they want to do good things, but
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question, which is, you know, how do, again, particular implementations, how are they conceived?
Right.
You know, from where does the paradigm emerge? I think that's a really important question. Just with all kinds of curriculum, right? You know, it's important to understand what the knowledge base is. So what are we drawing knowledge from?
You look at the link between the frame and the outcome. You just trace it, sort of.
I think that's absolutely. That's one. Yes, that's one trajectory of the research.
Whoops.
Okay.
Here we go.
Yeah.
I wonder about another side of engagement with respect to children. Is there any work that goes on in the arena of, you know, sort of primary education and
introducing young people, children, to expressive technologies, both to see, in a way, what, you know, what kind of sort of qualitative work, to see what kind of normative codes bubble up that are sort of the joints at which you might aim further work, but also to sort of inculcate the possibility of a culture of expression emerging in the voice of maturing young women.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of that space?
Mm-hmm. I think it's an extremely interesting space as well. And in fact, a lot of my own production work emerged in the context of youth media, but actually at a moment before it was a field. And so I witnessed then the transformation of what was a kind of activist engagement with young people, media literacy that was also a popular education and consciousness raising about local issues on a number of different scales, become codified into youth media.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened, I think, in that transition is that it became, again, laden with another set of desires for what youth should do with the media.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a lot of different terms. So we could parse it out, you know, and also we can parse it out according to foundations and their fads.
Sure. Yeah.
But it also changes with the with the political situation, with the overall economic situation, but it does indeed absolutely reflect kind of normative codes. And then what happens in the program is a contestation between what's possible, what are the visions of both the youth engaged, the instructors or administrators engaged, where the funding is coming from, and what their expectations and streams of accountability are, and then also just the general kind of social context in which the project is taking place. But I see many parallels between youth engagement globally with ICTs and what I'm talking about here.
In starting with the Leo Burnett PSA, it almost was like a parody. And when it got to, and who will this affect? And they say, your mother. I was like, is this a Chris Rock video? It's a punchline. And yet, in many of the videos, the women who are taking the camera in their hands, they'll repeat this mantra of information will set us free, video cameras will set us free, and it's like they're repeating something, and I'd like to see a little bit more the step forward. Well, so what's the action around it? Because in the My Anger video, where you have a woman who has been sexually assaulted, she's working with a collective to articulate that story, we have video being used very effectively for what it can be used for. Twitter we can use to say there's an emergency here right now, come see me. So I'd like to know, is it possible within that framework to find more of that? Because some of the constraints that you pointed out to us, we're hearing it both in how the women, what they repeat back, and then you see these breaks in the frame, this kind of subversion in the woman turning the camera in herself. There are tensions there, but there's also a lot of repetition about what this is supposed to do, and we don't know if we see it or not. So if you go to a different part of YouTube where you have young women who make themselves famous because they have all this information about how you can style your hair or how you can do your makeup really well. These may be very traditional gendered categories, but these girls are powerful. They've got millions of teenagers, you know, boy, girl, gay, straight, purple, and otherwise, who follow them. This is not traditionally activist work, how you do your hair, yet they're exploiting YouTube for what it does best. Mm-hmm. So is it possible to break the frame once you've set this critique up for us so we can see other options?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, I think that's a wonderful a wonderful emergent next step, which is what do we, you know, again, kind of build or produce from here? I showed you my four keyword searches, right? So clearly I was limiting the frame. I was asking the question, what's possible within this frame of ICT, women, gender, ICT 4D, women, gender? And I expected to see more. I expected to see more content creation. I expected to see more videos that would really speak to the visions for a better future for the women represented. And this, I think, is precisely pointing to where the field is at and then the work that needs to be done. That final piece, however, I do want to mention is a piece that was produced in a digital storytelling workshop. And so the idea of digital storytelling, I think, is also one that I want to both champion, but then also be cautious of, precisely because it tends to produce works that are in the first person, and yet because of the codified framework, they are also often repeatable, kind of in the same way that you are talking about the other videos, repeating the message over and over again. This video in particular, I want to honor very much and not to take it for granted as a wonderful piece. However, that sense overall of digital storytelling as kind of the panacea, the way in which women's voices are authentically accessed always without fail, I think I would want to question that.
Are there more questions?
Okay, Mayo.
Last one.
Thank you, Dalila, for the talk. I enjoyed it very much. I like a lot the... that you are engaging about the discussion on bringing from object to subject in terms of when analyzing a knowledge production. So you are referring that instead of think about these women as objects, think about the subject in terms of they also produce knowledge about their own situation. Or and this is also related to, for example, other areas like in research, how to do research in a way that you not make an object to what mm-hmm. you are researching, but they can also mm-hmm. become as a subject of the mm-hmm. research, and you mm-hmm. recognize them as knowledge producers and not mm-hmm. only like data mm-hmm. providers. Or mm-hmm. also in the area of medicine, not to consider the patient only as objects that the doctors go there, but also mm-hmm. as knowledge producers mm-hmm. because they know about mm-hmm. this situation. So mm-hmm. there are many areas in which this kind of going from objectivizing mm-hmm. To subjectivizing as knowledge mm-hmm. producers in the process mm-hmm. of interaction, I mm-hmm. think is very interesting. I wonder how like we could expect that the new technologies is going to actually reinforce that. Mm-hmm. It's going to reinforce like the sense of people acting as subject of knowledge production instead of objectivizing them because they mm-hmm. have more access, like all of us have more access to tools of production. Mm-hmm. So we could expect that this kind of tendency of subjects of knowledge to become more easy. And according to what he's saying, it's not happening. Like. Even if mm-hmm. you were referring like all the potential of YouTube being used for women to express their own voice is not happening. Like mm-hmm. all these new technology have many potentialities, but mm-hmm. the results are not being that kind of good as expected. So I'm wondering how it would be interesting also to see if this is also happening in the other areas. Like mm-hmm. it is also happening mm-hmm. in terms of the passion. Becoming more mm-hmm. active in the process of mm-hmm. taking care of their illness, is there also happening in the research in the sense of mm-hmm. changing the relationship with the subjects we study? Mm-hmm. So, and to see mm-hmm. if there are similar trends, so mm-hmm. it might be mm-hmm. also contradictions. But mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and then I wanted to ask a bit a question that I don't know why I ask, but I want to ask. You say about how to go from a woman talk to a woman voice. And why don't we, why there is not a presentation here about men going from men talk to men voice?
Because they have a voice, they don't talk.
No, no, really. Why mm-hmm. there is not this presentation?
That's great. Yeah. Let's do it. I mean, are you saying you... Do you want me to answer?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think the sense of talk to voice, first of all, is one that's highly contextual. I think one of the things that the videos shows is that, or what I was hoping to show, is that in these extremely different circumstances, the idea of voice takes on very different forms, right? And this is, of course, my own interpretive act, which I take responsibility for. But women's voice means an occupying of power and an articulation of possibility. I think that given very different contexts, that question is absolutely applicable to male voice. And I think that also opens up a very important question about gender and constructions of gender being contingent on socio-historical circumstances. I think that's another realm of discussion that I think even these videos could have a lot to say about.
No, what I was trying to reflect with the question is that mm-hmm. When we think about gender, we tend to think about studying woman studies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you were saying that 33% of the YouTube video providers mm-hmm. were women, then it means that the rest are men. So we also need to study their way of doing it
mm-hmm.
in order to break the element of the hegemonic and normal is the men reference, mm-hmm. and then the woman is like the specific.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. instead of, look, for example, I am thinking about addressing this in the case of Wikipedia, where there is around 12% of women editors. So instead of analyzing why women don't contribute more or how women contribute, why mm-hmm. don't we analyze the men behavior mm-hmm. in order to understand the overall process?
Mm-hmm.
I think we're out of time.
Yeah. So thank you. Thank you, Maya. Thank you. Thank you. We'll continue to talk about that.
Yeah. Thank you.